Welcome to Dead House. I'm Dylan.
And I'm Nathan.
And it is a lovely Sunday. How are you today?
A little bit tired, a little bit miserable weather.
You got a coffee there, I see.
Oh, yeah, up in my coffee game. Got a milk frother from IKEA for $1.56, something like that.
What a steal.
Yeah. You know what I did last night, out of character?
Let me think.
For me.
Today is Sunday. What would you have done on a Saturday evening?
No, but here's the thing. What wouldn't I have done on a Saturday evening?
Yeah, okay. Gone out?
I did go out to my first ever football game.
Oh, okay. You've not been to a footy game before.
No, I've not. I'm not a footy guy.
Who played?
Let me recall. Dolphins and Tigers.
Okay.
At Suncorp Stadium.
Well, that's a rough... I mean, Dolphins, yeah, local Redcliffe boys, but I hear they're a top contender for the Wooden Spoon Tigers.
I'll be honest with you. I still can't talk sports with you. It was all right. It was fine. I don't see me ever going back to a football game.
Yeah, okay.
We got cheap tickets and just felt like giving it a go.
Okay.
But
was it at like Redcliffe? Like at that Scarborough
I did say Suncorp Stadium, so your listening skills as good as ever.
Wait, you went all the way to Suncorp. Is it still a bitch to get into? I've been there for some concerts and it's a bit of a hike.
Well, luckily my partner works literally next to it, and so she got to take advantage of free parking at her work.
Nice. Very good.
Make it very good.
So was it like the atmosphere that threw you off, or the fact that you're just not interested in sport?
I'm just not that interested in football. The atmosphere wasn't what I was expecting. Watching it at home, which I rarely do.
Mm. We only really watch Origin just because we hang out with friends, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, I like the commentator. The commentator does a lot for me.
Okay.
You know, commentates the game. No commentator on a live game. That's normal, but yeah. It was so silent. The game's happening. I was expecting it to be louder.
Yeah, there you go. I think I've gone to maybe, I don't know, 3 in my time. And it's probably been years since the last one. But I remember the atmosphere is kind of cool. Like, I've been to probably more AFL games than NRL because I grew up in Victoria. But, you know, like, you're going for your team and...
Maybe that's the problem. I wasn't going for a team.
Yeah, I was going to say, when they're like, get tackled in goal or, you know, it's a close one and the time is counting down. Everyone gets excited and rowdy. But I can see if you're not going for a team, how it would just not faze you in the slightest.
Yes, I'm not... Yeah, I'm just not into it.
Just a crowd of drunk bogans.
Okay. Well, then that too. A fucking plastic cup of beer is like festival prices, like $10.60 or whatever for a 4X gold.
Oh, that's grim.
Which, how can they charge that much when they make that beer literally like less than 100 meters away?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well.
Anyway, what have you been up to?
Not a whole lot. I saw a Brisbane band called Days Like These on Friday night with my friend Pace. And it was their first headline tour, and it was a hometown show. And I've been following them for a few years now, and they were like a metalcore 5-piece, and now it's just an alt rock duo.
Right, so Jesus, yeah, okay.
Really interesting evolution.
Change.
But yeah, they were sick. I was there. I bought a ticket, and then the next day I got invited to review it with a media pass.
Yep.
And a plus one. And I was like, I'll still go. So the plus one meant I could bring a friend anyway. And due to some missing wallets for ID, we got in late and we missed the first two bands.
Oh my.
But I caught The Last Martyr in Days Like These, and in my review I was like, super sorry that I missed the first two bands. I talked them up. I was like, I've seen one of them before anyway, so I knew what they sounded like. And I was like, here's links to their music. Please go check them out. Just to like make up for the fact I caught half a show. But yeah, they were sick. And yesterday I went with the folks to see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Okay. And I haven't seen the last one, was Afterlife, but was this one any good? Because I only avoid trailers for movies I want to see, and so I've seen the trailer for Frozen Empire.
Yeah, it was...
Didn't look that good,
it was if I'm honest. Fine. Like, okay. It's not my kind of movie. It's essentially like a blockbuster action comedy, which are not my vibe. But
right.
My dad's a big fan, and they had a lot of nods to the OG Ghostbusters, like
they'd
particularly
have to.
Having, you know, most of the original cast back as well.
Rip Harold Ramis.
Yeah. But, yeah, I was like, we were trying to talk about it on the car ride home, and I was just like pulling it apart, like identifying all these plot holes. And
it's just not your movie.
I was like, look, it's some mindless fun, but, yeah, not my kind of movie. But, hey, it was cool to see, you know, Bill Murray.
Yeah, but apparently he's a one-liners. Dick in real life.
Oh, okay.
Which makes sense as to why he plays dicks in movies now, I guess.
Scrooge.
Yeah. But any of his movies, he always plays an arsehole.
Yeah, yeah. But, look, that was a bit of fun. So, here I am today, a slow start. Woke up early and started working a bit more on the manuscript. I've almost finished my first draft, so, you know, that first
looking
copy,
forward to reading it.
Yeah, that first perusal will not be far away if any listeners are so inclined. So, but what are we doing today, my
friend? I'm excited about today. We've got a topic episode.
I'm in the mood. Did you notice my shirt?
I did. I mean, you often wear shirts exactly like that. What is that? Universal Tales of Monsters. What? Does that say Monstera?
You have your glasses. Yeah.
Yeah, but okay. Monstera. Well, it's a made up word. I'm a bit confused.
It's a hot pink and like fluoro green Wolfman shirt that you and Alex got me years ago.
Ah, yes. I definitely remember. Wolfman. Werewolves. We're talking about werewolves.
Werewolves.
We are wolves.
Yeah. Favorite topic of ours. I've been into werewolves since I was like a kid, man. I don't know if I got it from like movies or books and shit, but they're just cool.
It would have to be. I mean, are there any goosebumps about werewolves? I don't recall.
Oh, that's probably what it was, because the first one I ever read was Werewolf from Fever Swamp.
Oh, shit. Okay. I've not read that one, so.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Yeah, there's a few. There's another one, I think, called Werewolf Skin, and the reveal is that he finds, like, this werewolf costume, and he, like, wears it for Halloween or something, goes with, like, a cousin, and turns out, like, she's an actual werewolf, and he goes to, like, pull the costume off, and it doesn't come off. And
okay.
Yeah, so that's probably where I
that's
got
where
interest
it started.
From. It's probably Goosebumps, and then, like, fucking, I don't know, Van Helsing, and books and shit like that. But,
surely. Well, I think, yeah. I don't remember anything from when I was that young, but I think I've mentioned one of the movies I watched in like the very turn of when I went from being scared of quote-unquote horror movies to loving them was the Underworld movies,
which
is very heavily centered on werewolves and vampires.
Yep, yep.
So that I liked that.
Yeah, nice.
Liked our favorite Van Helsing.
Yeah, yeah. Very divisive films, but I think because they were like a cornerstone to our like, I don't know, like gateway into horror, but also an interest in that kind of stuff, like those mythical monsters.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about that movie. We're not really going to talk about that today, but it's just like it's got a pretty good cast. I mean, Hugh Jackman is the man. It's got like little hints of extra things, like you got Jekyll and Hyde at the beginning. It's got the Frankenstein. It's got werewolves, vampires.
It's my jam.
Yeah, it's like it's just cool. It's like gothic.
It's
a good intro.
But
I mean, dogs are a man's best friend. So, you know, what happens when a man becomes his own best friend, like Barf from Spaceballs?
Oh, good Lord. So I guess we should probably go into like the history of I guess, werewolf lore, because they've been around for centuries.
Long, long time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of debated where the first one like was or where it came from.
Is it like a British thing?
Oh, I don't remember what specific nationality, because there's a couple of different accounts. There's the old, I want to say like Slavic, like lore and myths about them, where there was maybe a family or a tribe that would a couple of times during the year wear like wolf skins, and that would make them become animalistic.
Okay.
There was, I think, the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Okay.
Is something I've heard of before, and apparently that in it had a character that turned one of her ex-lovers into a wolf.
Ooh.
And so that had a bit more. And what else? They're the earliest ones I can remember reading about.
Mm.
And then it kind of maybe took a backseat until like early horror with like, I think the first movie was just called The Werewolf.
Yeah, I think I've got a little cinema background for like traditional werewolves. Because I know like in Nosferatu, the 2022 one.
1922.
That's a long time in the future.
Living in the future.
The 1922 film, they mention werewolves and then they show like a hyena.
Okay.
So like they were, you know, mentioned, but yeah, The Werewolf, I think, was a 1913 American silent film, which was probably the first example of it. But I think the most notable or like better early example is Werewolf of London from 1935.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know too much about it.
Not to be confused with an American werewolf in London.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that name pop up a bit, but I just don't know much about that movie. But of course, like my shirt, the one that most people know is the iconic Universal film, The Wolfman, which was 1941. And I want to say directed by George Wagner and starring, of course, Lon Chaney Jr., who also went by the Man of a Thousand Faces, because he just played all sorts of monsters and things like that. Or maybe it was his father, Lon Chaney, who was also an actor that went by that name, because he played the OG Phantom from Phantom of the Opera.
Okay,
so ran in the family. And yeah, I've not seen The Wolfman, the 1941 film, in full, but I've seen enough of it to like get a feel for it. And
right. Maybe enough to know that it's not your movie.
Well, like, I love werewolves, man. I love Universal Horror. But as far as their classics go, it's probably one of the worst ones. Yeah, it's just, it's so many plot holes. And it's like, it's cool makeup. Like the yak hair and stuff that was like glued to his face that took like a whole day just sitting in a chair for that. Like, that's sick. And you got to respect the effort they went to for the practical effects. But the story is definitely lackluster.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, in Hollywood, I guess, werewolves were modernized in the 80s with more of, like, a body horror approach.
Yeah, that definitely came, like, at a time when all the practical effects were getting a lot better, and so then they use them to make these wild transformations, and, like, that's essentially what the movie becomes centered around.
Yeah.
And so that's why it becomes so popular.
And pretty much since the 80s, which a couple of the examples we're going into today are from, they all had, like, a tinge of comedy as well.
Sure. I think I did want to do Teen Wolf as one of the as one of the movies on this episode, but you wouldn't allow that.
It's not horror, that's why.
Yeah, I know, but it's just such... It's a, well, okay, I've not seen it in like 15 years, but I loved it when I was a kid.
Yeah, see. I just remember like him playing basketball, and it's the only thing I remember.
Yeah, he's the Teen Wolf, becomes basketball, and he becomes a wolf.
Nice.
There's a scene where his dad is just... sitting with a, like, reading a newspaper, hiding his face, and then Michael J. Fox comes in. It is Michael J. Fox, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Comes in and is like, Dad, I'm a werewolf. And then he just puts the newspaper down and he's just casually a werewolf with glasses too. peak humor right there.
Oh, that's rough. But yeah, I guess they often like tie in comedy with it because it just makes it like more acceptable, I guess. Like, it's easier to like suspend your disbelief when they're kind of leaning into the fact that they know it's impossible.
Maybe there's something to do with the juxtaposition, let me try that again, of like, once they do become the werewolf, they always become this mindless, ferocious beast that are going to like tear up everyone they love.
Yeah.
And so if you have a whole movie of that tone, then it's not exactly, you know, viewer friendly. Which we're kind of used to nowadays. There's a lot of movies that are that dark and twisted and macabre.
Yeah.
But back in the day, in the 80s and shit, they wanted something more lighthearted so people would want to watch it. And so they, I guess, front load it with all that comedy or, you know, maybe a bit of drama or heartfelt stuff.
Yeah.
And then have all the chaos at the end.
Mm. No, I agree. I mean, in saying that, there are certainly a lot of like just all-out horror, like werewolf films.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard to pull it off like well and actually be scared, I think. Probably because of their cinematic history. But I guess back on the note of like body horror comedy, I guess you call it. Should we divulge our first film of this topic?
Sure.
Yeah, so this is going to be a tough act to follow because we're starting strong. I'm just going to go through these in like year of release. Are you cool with that?
Yeah, okay. I assumed as much.
Okay, so from the top, let's go into An American Werewolf in London, as you mentioned before, 1981, which is probably the one of the earliest like actual horror examples and still probably the best.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. Definitely the ones we're going to talk about today. Mm. And I'm not going to lie, I thought the second movie we're going to talk about came out before this.
Oh, okay.
So that...
They were the That's same year.
Oh, okay.
The same year. I'm not sure about month of release. I might have cocked that up, but both 81. But yeah, this one is definitely the most notable.
Yeah, and this one, I think, of the ones we're going to talk about, has the most like comedic elements to it, and it's probably to do with the main character having this. I don't know. He's weird. You know? He's just a weird guy. His best friend has just been murdered by an animal, and he's cracking jokes.
Yeah. You know what it gave me vibes of was OG Pet Sematary.
I was thinking the exact same thing, except I think they actually did it very well in American Werewolf in London, and they didn't go too far. Whereas in Pet Sematary, it's just goofy as shit.
So in American Werewolf in London, it was a US and UK co-production, written and directed by John Landis, the man behind the Blues Brothers.
Okay, I was going to say, we've ever heard that name before.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Because I know you're a fan of that movie.
Yeah.
And he also did the Twilight Zone movie, which I didn't know.
Okay.
And apparently he had like the first draft of the script in 1969, but just couldn't secure funding until like the early 80s.
Okay.
So he sat on it for a while, and I'm glad he...
Which is probably good because the effects would not have been as iconic.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as well, it probably wouldn't have been taken as seriously as a horror like before then. But also it had a budget of $5.8 million. And made around $62 million.
Okay.
So...
That's pretty good.
In terms of, like, 80s, yeah, that's Very good. And starring David Norton, Griffin Dunne, and Jenny Agutter, I'm going to say.
Sure.
I don't know how else to say that. and like you said, such convincing makeup and effects by Rick Baker that it actually encouraged the Academy Awards to introduce a category of best makeup.
Hell yeah.
Which it won, the first one.
I mean, of course, what could compete with that?
The inaugural best makeup went to a fucking werewolf body horror comedy. So good. And I mean, this film, it must have had such a rep after it came out that Michael Jackson hired John Landis and his crew for the Thriller music video, of course, narrated by my man Vincent Price.
Excellent.
And it's just, man, the practical effects in this are so sick and so, like, kind of grotesque as well. Like, it's just gross, almost.
It's not as gross as a different movie that we're going to talk about, but it looks convincing in a way. Like,
yeah.
Especially probably the most iconic shot from it is, and the one I've seen recycled everywhere, is when he's looking at his hand and his hand is, like, growing out.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know how they did it. Even to this day, they use rubber. And
I can tell you how they
did it. Is
there
a balloon? I don't know.
They had empty syringes inside this fake hand that he wore over his own hand.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, like, plunged him out with, like, an air pump.
So simple.
To make it stretch, like, underneath the latex.
So beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool. And a lot of, like, bold nudity in this film. I had seen it once before we did it for this pod. And I forgot you get some...
Some wang.
Know, some dong shots.
Some dong shots, yeah.
Particularly, like, in public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love that moment when he's, like, asking the kid for the balloons.
That's a bit strange.
And he just, like, hops around the front of the bush. It's so fucking weird.
But it's very... that bit's played very comedically.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean about the tone of it. Like, and this comes after a scene when he's just mauled a bunch of, like, random Londonites. I don't know
what
that's
what they're called. Such a cool contrast.
To just... He wakes up in a zoo and he's running around. He's making... sort of jokes at the kid's expense.
Yeah.
And he goes back and starts feeling up his missus and making jokes and starts saying he feels better than he ever has.
Yeah, the main character, David, played by David, is such an odd personality because he's so, like, confident and carries himself so well that he can have, like, you know, a one-night stand and he can, you know, approach people in public naked. But then he's so, like, convincingly petrified when he starts changing or he knows something's wrong and he's getting, like, those visions and he's, like, haunted by his dead friend. So really good, like, portrayal, I think, of that character.
Yeah, for sure.
As, I don't know, it's not a confused character. It's just versatile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, quite effective. And a lot of, like, funny side characters in this film. Like, you've got the US diplomat or whatever, like, the member of the embassy.
He was a bit out of place for me. I didn't really like his inclusion in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, what was the point of him?
I think it was just comedic element, but it didn't serve the story.
I didn't find him funny, so maybe that's why it didn't land for me.
Yeah, okay.
But he only shows up in one scene.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like a real person. He's like a caricature of himself.
He's, like, really empathetic with David in the hospital, and then when he starts to feel underappreciated, he's just, like, an asshole to him. It's like when the doctor keeps getting called in his office by that same patient. They're just like, I don't know, tell him I'm dead.
Yeah, see, the doctor I really liked. I really liked him.
That was great. And I also liked the investigators. I think they were, like, the two detectives. And
again, I liked the main one, but the fact that they had one set up as the sort of buffoon of the pair. It's like, what? Like, I guess they do include it to put in some humor. But it didn't land with me.
Yeah.
So I didn't really like it that much.
Yeah. It was... I liked it. It kind of reminded me of the, like, investigators in fucking Insidious. But I guess a bit more, like, on the nose.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was campy. It was early 80s. I thought it was fine. And also something I thought was kind of unusual was a lot of overt references to the Wolfman.
Sure. I mean, he literally, like, quotes it, right?
Yeah. Quotes it. They, like...
dissects the scene.
Sees the, like, pentagram on the wall of the pub and he's like, oh, Universal Studios use that in the Wolfman. And then when he's, like, in bed, you know, talking to his girlfriend, he's like, oh, like in the Wolfman, this happens. I thought that was quite bold for, like, a werewolf film to just, like, maybe it knew it was not going to compete with such an iconic film, so it just paid homage blatantly to it.
Or it could also be their way of sort of getting over having to explain certain things of, like, okay. Our viewers probably know or have seen the Wolfman. It's like, hey, just think of the Wolfman. Now this.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Sort of relying on that past experience movie
to,
like, set things up for this.
Yeah, you don't need to, like, explain all the lore of it because people know how werewolves work.
Yeah. Which, no silver bullets in this, I don't think. So
yeah, I noticed that.
The werewolf in this just gets killed by regular means.
Yeah, yeah. And I also want to point out that The Wolfman, the 1941 film, actually created that lore of silver bullets killing a werewolf.
Yeah, okay.
That wasn't a thing in traditional literature before then.
There you go.
But yeah, you're right. He just dies from just getting shot, like same as the one at the start. So, to give people a bit of background, if you haven't seen it or don't know what it's about, it's these two American friends backpacking in England. And they're just like walking through the countryside. One of them gets killed. The other gets attacked by a werewolf. And he slowly becomes one for the rest of the film.
Yeah, that's going to be the same description essentially for all the werewolf movies, really.
Yeah.
I feel like every werewolf movie kind of has the same setup of like, okay, there's an inciting incident where someone dies, someone survives. There might be some guilt throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, a slow transformation into a werewolf.
See, in this film, though, when David is haunted by Jack, like his dead friend, and he's telling him, like, oh, you've got 3 days, you've got 2 days, you've got 1 day left, is he referring to, like, the full moon?
Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't know if there was just, like, I don't know, a week for the curse to take effect or what.
Yeah, full moon, because then that's why he was unconscious in the hospital for 3 weeks.
Oh, like, they say 3 weeks, like, had passed?
Yeah, he's like, oh, how long have I been out? He's like, oh, you've been unconscious or in a coma for 3 weeks.
Shit.
And then...
I don't remember that.
Yeah, and then I think he even says, we're going to discharge you in a week. And
right.
So that's a full month.
Okay, that kind of makes sense.
I don't know how moons work. So
yeah, like how long
me.
A moon phase lasts.
Because, yeah, well, I always thought a full moon was one night, but apparently not. Apparently full moons, I guess, can be successive nights.
Yeah,
like in this movie.
There's also, like, other films where, like, the full moon has to be visible by the character to turn.
Yep.
Like, sometimes, like, it gets cloud cover and then they shift back to a man. And it's like, that's a bit weird. But, yeah, okay, I guess that makes sense. I missed that very important piece of information.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's typical werewolf stuff, only on the full moon.
Yeah, I do like how the film opens, though, with them in the back of a pickup truck with sheep.
Yep.
It's like that old euphemism.
I thought that was a very funny opening, too.
Yeah, that was very cool. And I do like when that first werewolf gets shot by the pub locals, it, like, shifts back to a man.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, straight from the top, werewolves.
Yes, like, yes.
There's no kind of guessing or suspicion around it. And I do like that David in hospital starts having these dream sequences where they essentially twist into nightmares. Like, there's one, he's just running in the woods naked.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one where it's a really cool, like, double bluff. He's, like, at home and it's like an invasion of these, like, werewolf soldiers in, like, army uniform, just, like, holding everyone captive. And they kind of look like Cenobites, I thought, from Hellraiser.
I didn't see that, but go ahead.
Maybe just Chatterer. And then he, like, comes to in the hospital. And then another one, like, comes behind the curtain. I was like, oh,
it's beautiful. They did the classic, oh, you think he's woken up, but he hasn't.
Yeah,
another scare.
Inception. They were sick. Like, I don't know the purpose of it.
I like that they just progressed, like, more and more chaotic throughout the movie.
Yeah.
His first one was just running through the woods. And his next one was running through the woods, catches a deer and is eating it.
Mm.
And then you get that home invasion.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of to portray his, like, getting closer to becoming, like, an animal or a monster.
Yeah. And I guess that soldier one, maybe it was just, like, the paranoia of feeling like he's held hostage.
Probably, yeah. Something like that.
But, man, we got to talk about that hospital scene when he gets visited by Jack's ghost, I guess. And he's just, like, he looks like he was, but just, like, freshly
killed,
mauled.
Mutilated.
Just a facial wound with, like, bits dangling off him and glistening blood down his exposed throat.
I also love the contradiction? The contrast of, like, he looks disgusting, but he's just acting very normal.
Yeah.
And very, like,
can I have a piece of that toast?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's so good. And I like that as Jack pops up throughout the film to, like, be this guide or almost a warning for David, he's, like, progressively decomposed.
Mm-hmm.
So because this was, like, what, 3 weeks after and the first time he sees him, it's like he was just attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And he explains he's kind of in this, like, limbo state until the curse is broken, right?
Yep.
He's like, you got to sever the bloodline. The werewolf that turned you is dead. Now you've got to die. Because when you see him again, like, in the nurse's apartment that David ends up, like, shacking up with, he's, like, greeny blue and scaly and gross.
He's getting progressively worse, more decomposed.
Yeah, yeah, which is really cool. And so anyway, like I mentioned, David gets close with one of the nurses. They kind of have like a one night stand, and then she just like lets him stay at his apartment. So I'm guessing the backpackers didn't have a place in mind when they arrived in England.
It kind of seems like they didn't have any plan in mind. They just got on a truck with some sheep, and then they just started walking, and then they're at a hospital, and then he's in London.
Through the miserable England countryside.
But I guess that's backpacking, right? You just walk through a country without any real plan.
I don't know. Yeah. And then the doctor goes back to that pub where they first visited before Jack was killed and David was attacked. And I like it's called the Slaughtered Lamb.
Yep.
And it's really a weird interaction where like the locals are trying to play off that they know nothing about it, but they're so like sus and hostile. The doctor's like just becomes an investigator now.
Yeah.
Where before you get that famous transformation scene, David's like just agitated and restless. Like he's sitting there trying to read. Can't pay attention, goes to try and sleep, lays there for like 5 seconds and gets up. And then it's not till that transformation where he's like reading again, but he's just like covered in sweat, screams how hot it is, like rips his shirt off and then just starts changing.
It's such a change from being so calm, if not a bit restless, to all of a sudden he's screaming agony. It's like a switch was flipped and like now he's transforming. And the same thing happens again later in the movie theater.
Yeah, yeah. It's like he starts off just being bored and then like he knows something's wrong, but he doesn't know what it is. And then it's really interesting watching like behind the scenes interviews with the makeup artist and John Landis about this scene, because they made the creative decision to have his eyes shut tight and like squinting like he's in pain for the transformation. So it was a bit more believable when they show like the snout elongating and ears getting pointed and all this kind of thing, which I can see in retrospect was a very wise creative decision in comparison to one of the other films we'll talk about where the eyes are open, and because it's not a real person they don't blink and
it's just hard to show like a real person's eyes when it's not a real person.
Essentially, because they knew it was going to be like a long strained shot, they thought it would be smarter to do it with the eyes closed. It's more believable, and I think they're absolutely right.
Oh yeah,
in hindsight. And man, it's just so cool. You see like the hairs like come out of the skin, which I think they just had like fake hairs through fake skin. And they just pulled them down and then reversed it in editing.
Oh,
like
yeah.
It's so simple.
It's all very smart.
Mm. Simple stuff like syringes in a fake hand, like I said, but it's just so effective and stood the test of time in my opinion.
Yeah, hell yeah. I like an aspect of the movie because it is a werewolf movie, but all throughout the movie, it also kind of hints at like, I don't want to say like mental illness, but him being crazy. And so he thinks he's crazy because he's obviously seeing a dead friend who's saying he's going to become a werewolf and should kill himself.
Yeah.
But it's also like interesting to look at the movie with that in mind. He's just going crazy. He's had like a traumatic experience and now he's seeing his dead friend telling him to kill himself. Like if you take the werewolf out of it.
Guilt.
Yeah, it's like completely survivor's guilt. And it's like if it wasn't a werewolf in the movie, it'd be, I don't know, it'd be weird.
You know what would have been interesting is they probably could have done this film much like that, but there was no werewolf. Like, the werewolf's in the film, but it's not real. It's his mind, like, making up a reason why he's so scared and guilty.
Yeah, because even that's when the doctor is, like, right till the end when he sees the werewolf, doesn't believe there is a werewolf, but believes that he believes he's a werewolf. And so that will, like, convince himself to go out and murder people.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting like angle to take.
It'd be like if you crossed it with the Babadook or something like that.
Yeah.
There's an interesting point in that I didn't consider, but you're absolutely right. And man, I love that like subway attack scene where the dude just gets off a train, he is like growling down the end of the tunnel, starts like walking through this seemingly abandoned train station. And then he's like going up the escalator, or he like falls down, so he's like slowly going up the escalator. And there's this like static shot from the top of it, and you just for like a couple seconds see the full body like werewolf creep into the corner of the frame.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but maybe it was just because it was far away and it was a short shot, but it looked like it was scary. It was quite compelling, I think, for the time. Mm-hmm. And you get that like jump cut to the lion in the zoo, which was cool.
Yeah.
And he wakes up naked in a wolf enclosure.
Which I think is pretty funny.
Yeah. And I have read that they legit filmed that in a zoo. And they were meant to wrap up filming by 9 a.m. before, like, you know, punters entered and were looking at all the attractions. And they ran overtime. So when they cut that scene, as in, like, cut filming, and David was like, man, how'd you get, like, all those actors, all those extras in? And he's like, oh, they're just people, like, they're paid to enter the zoo.
Just watching his naked ass
watching this naked man in with the wolves. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Which is so funny. He confides in, like, the nurse, Alex, who is like staying in her apartment that like maybe is going crazy, like you said. And then after that first night where he's killed and he wakes up in the zoo, he's invigorated and he's like got this new lust for life. And that reminded me a lot of Jeff Goldblum in The Fly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where like at first he's kind of repelled by everything and then he kind of feels its powers and it's like a rush for him. So I thought that was nice. And then he just like tries to get arrested in public by cursing in front of people in a public square.
Spitting treason, let's say. The queen is a man.
Yeah.
That was a good one. It's a good line.
Yeah, that was good. I think the third time Jack appears and he kind of lures him into this adult movie theater and he's sitting in the back row and he's like a pretty much a disheveled corpse at this point, like a skeleton with like green skin peeling off and... Mm-hmm. That's the most goofy Jack looks because it's like overtly a puppet or whatever. But it is cool that as he's like trying to convince David to kill himself to, you know, stop the werewolf curse from continuing, he like starts summoning all these recently deceased victims of his.
Yep.
And you get like the hobos just like turn around in front of him. It's like, you could try drowning.
Yeah.
And then that couple's like, oh, run a bath with a toaster. They're just having fun thinking of creative ways for him to die, which I thought was good.
That's when the dark humor gets me. That's the funny stuff.
Yeah, that was great. And then he changes in that movie theater. And I like that at that point, you can't see like Jack or any of the ghosts, I guess, of his victims.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just Dave like rocking that chair and moaning. And everyone just thinks he's just like getting into that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good. And then you get this like 20 car pileup when the werewolf breaks out. So I don't know, was there ice on the roads or just shit London drivers?
It's panic, mate. It's panic, pure unadulterated panic.
Yeah, like you don't see the werewolf. It's just people swerving and shit and crashing.
Yeah, but there's like cops rocking up. There's a whole crowd of people as distractions. Yeah. Look, I don't know, man.
It was like some cool direction.
Yeah, but it definitely took a turn because it's been kind of like a little bit, you know, chaotic with all the murdering happening and he turns into a werewolf. But all of a sudden there's this huge action sequence where cars are piling up, he's chased throughout the city, there's gunshots. It's definitely like a movie that ends with a bang.
Yeah, and then like the cops corner him in an alley. Alex sees the werewolf and knows it's David, and they just shoot him, and it's a shot of him naked and bleeding from gunshot wounds, and the credits roll. So it was very
bleak ending.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't say it's anticlimactic because, like you said, the chaos through the streets in the lead up definitely raises the stakes. But it was just a very like kind of sudden ending.
I'm just now realizing there's a lot of bleak endings in werewolf movies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they got to break the curse. They got to sever the bloodline.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's never a werewolf cure, so it's either
their duty.
Yeah, it's either they die or they. I don't know. Live happily as a werewolf?
I don't know. They die or you get 8 sequels.
Yeah. We should probably move on to the next one. But before we do, I just want to mention, I like the fact that all of the sounds on the... All of the songs on the soundtrack are about moons. There's like...
Oh, I heard Bad Moon Rising.
There was Bad Moon Rising. There was Blue Moon.
Nice.
And there was... I can't remember the other one, but another thing to do with the moon.
That's cool. Smart.
Very, very overt.
Yeah. And they had a sequel in 1997 called An American Werewolf in Paris, which I've not seen. And I've
heard bad things about it.
Yeah, I've heard it's probably not worth watching anyway.
Because I think werewolf movies kind of took a dip after the 80s.
And John Landis didn't have anything to do with it. So, but yeah, shall we move on?
Now, that was a very good,
very good
80s werewolf movie. Let's turn the tables and talk about a less good. I won't say bad.
It's popular.
Because I don't hate it. I think you disliked it more than I did.
Yeah, interesting.
But
usually films I show you, I'm like, oh, dude, this is great. And you're like, oh, it was fine.
Yeah, The Howling.
The Howling. Also 1981.
Not the movie I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, dude. I had you over for dinner to watch this last week and I'd never seen it. I just bought it on Blu-ray years ago because it's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched it. And many times throughout the film, we were laughing when we weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
We were like... Who the hell is that?
Yep.
We didn't know who characters were. We didn't know why things were happening. And when we got to the credits, we were like, what the fuck did we just watch? I don't know, man. It's like people like this movie, but I just thought it kind of sucked.
Okay. It wasn't a good movie. I'd only ever heard of it, I think, really from that one line in Scream.
Oh, yeah.
And then sort of, I heard people reference it before, but I didn't know what it was about.
Mm.
And I'd never seen anything from it. And so I was expecting something more like Wolfman or American Werewolf in London, where it was a werewolf killing people maybe, and what we got was not really that. It was very
a dysfunctional
weird
relationship in a crime thriller.
Yeah, and so when I say I don't hate this movie, it's that I like what it's trying to do, and I see nuggets of goodness in it.
Yeah,
but overall, it was executed quite poorly.
Yeah, if it weren't for Rob Bottin's creature effects, like, that's the saving grace. Like, the kid who, you know, gave us a lot of the iconic scenes in The Thing. So he would have been, like, 20 when he did this. So you've got to respect that.
Yes.
And that's what I mean, like, before when I was saying in that famous transformation scene in An American Werewolf in London, the eyes are closed and you see the snout elongate and the hair sprout, the fingernails and all this kind of stuff. In this, it's like one, like, too long shot, in my opinion, of the face with, like, the eyes unblinking or even moving as the face kind of, like, bubbles and shifts.
Yeah,
and
I think I even said, like, oh, it's nice of her to wait until he's finished transforming before she throws acid on his face. Yeah. Like, it's very kind
it's
of
like
her.
A 5-minute scene and then she screams and throws something at him.
Yeah, but it's a very adult movie, we'll call it, because it literally opens like in a essentially like a, what do they call it, a blue theater, a blue movie theater, like individual porno booths,
drop a coin in and watch it and pull the curtain across.
It's like a very overtly sexualized beginning of the movie, and then I think throughout the movie they kind of keep leaning on this idea that like you shouldn't repress things, where it's kind of talking about like your sexuality and your like masculinity and your manhood, but the like the undertone is about you shouldn't suppress being a werewolf, essentially.
Because
of the twist at the end, it's like the guy who's giving those talks is a werewolf himself, and so he's trying to teach people, no, you shouldn't repress what you are. You should just, I don't know.
See, the interesting thing as well is they kind of have this sort of infamous killer on the loose called, is it Eddie the Wrangler or something?
I'm not entirely sure.
His name's Eddie anyway. And you learn he's a werewolf. And you kind of get that from the first scene because he asks her to turn around in the booth and you can't see past the projection light, but, you know, you see an ominous silhouette and you get the idea. And I think that was meant to be like a big reveal. And then you discover that this like group of people in, it's almost like a mental health resort that they call the Colony. Another, you know, it could have been worse. They could have called it the Pack. But it turns out like every member of this, you know, colony is a werewolf. And do you think like, was the tie, like, did Eddie maybe convert those people, like bite them or attack them, and they became werewolves? And that's why he's talking about like embracing what you are, like you were just saying?
No, Eddie's just a part of him.
Okay.
Because isn't Eddie, maybe he's not related to the not a witch, but the chick.
The occult leader.
The occult leader, yeah. I don't think they're related, but I think he's just from that society and he just escaped and wanted to live unrepressed.
I see.
Because that whole colony is trying to like become a part of society and so they're hiding their wolfness, whereas I guess he was sick of it and he just wanted to get out and just let it be free.
I see what you're saying.
That's kind of what I got.
Yeah, okay. So I guess a little bit of background on The Howling. It was inspired by the 1977 Gary Brandner novel of the same name. And apparently he wasn't a fan of the adaptation.
Right.
And it was directed and co-edited by Joe Dante. So the man behind Piranha and Gremlins. And honestly, I was expecting a horror comedy going into this because of Piranha and Gremlins. But
right.
I don't think it was meant to be funny. It definitely had like a serious tone. It was just hella dated.
Yeah. Yeah, all the stuff we were laughing at were not meant to be laughed at.
Yeah, it was just like a clunky plot.
Yeah, clunky plot, very confusing at times, and somewhat bad acting throughout.
Yeah. And it was written by John Sayles and Terrence H. Winkless. Made on a budget of just $1 million, and made around $18 million. So somehow hugely successful. And I wonder if that was largely due to Rob Bottin's special effects.
It would have to be.
Which, funnily enough, were meant to be done by Rick Baker, the guy who did American Werewolf in London.
Oh, okay.
So, would have been a much better film, potentially.
No, I kind of like it.
Yeah,
like,
it's campy.
It's different, and it's the transformations in this movie are, like, grosser. Because you get, like, the skin bubbling. It's not as clean a transformation.
Yeah.
So, it's not like I prefer it, but I think it fits with this movie.
Yeah, I agree. Because in American Werewolf in London, you kind of hear like the crunches and the groans of the bones growing and the skin tearing and stuff. But there's no like viscous bodily fluids or anything.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think it's in like one of the later installments where the way that the werewolves shift is they kind of melt into a puddle and then grow out of that.
I kind of like that. Like a butterfly.
Yeah. And apparently that's like a more accurate adaptation of the novel.
Oh, okay.
So Anyway, we'll get into that later. But yeah, for people who haven't seen The Howling or heard of it, it's essentially this woman who's a TV reporter gets kidnapped by this killer on the loose, Eddie. And then like her co-workers become like investigators to track him down and find information about it. She gets sent to this colony with her partner where she can have time off and try and relax. And turns out there are werewolves as well. And that's kind of it? The story. That's kind of it.
I think you're really underselling the movie there. I think you're letting your personal feelings sway people from not watching it. But more or less, yeah, that's what happens. I like the idea of this movie because if you compare it to American Werewolf in London, you got, like, it's very self-contained. There's one werewolf gets killed, another person turns into a werewolf.
Mm.
And when they are a werewolf, they're just a mindless beast and they have no memory when they're back to human.
That's
whereas
a
this one,
fair point.
It like leans more into the, they're not exactly mindless beasts. They're a community.
They're very aware.
You're multiple werewolves. They know they're werewolves. They know what they're doing. I think even when they're in wolf form, it's pretty much...
Because they can speak.
Not in wolf form.
Oh, I thought Eddie did, at least.
Oh, I don't think so.
Because he's like, oh, you want a piece of my mind? He like digs into his forehead and pulls out like a piece of flesh.
Yeah, but he's not a werewolf at that point.
What is he? Because he's like fucked up.
Yeah, he's fucked up, but he's not a werewolf. That's just before he turns into a werewolf.
Okay.
But yeah, and so you get... And then I also like the idea that you got some werewolves that want to like fit into society. And so they try to repress what they are. They eat cattle instead of humans. But then you got the other ones that are like, no, we are what we are. We should be free. We should, you know, let it out essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a nice little like conflict there.
Yeah. Okay. I can appreciate that. I guess one thing that also turned me off it from like a technique point of view is there's just no subtlety in this film.
Yeah.
Every single prop was wolf related.
Whether the wolf chili?
The wolf chili, the wolf's antiseptic bottle, a fucking book on wolves, little like ornaments of wolves. It was a bit much.
Hey, it's a wolf movie. What do you expect?
They had a budget of $1 million. They just...
Half that went to wolves.
$500 was given to the set designer. He said, go to some op shops, pick me up some wolf-related things and just splash them on the set.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and yeah, like I said, there wasn't like enough humor to be silly. Whereas like some of those, you know, body horror comedies, they're kind of wacky, so it makes it a bit more enjoyable. So that was just, you know, something that took me out of it a bit. But it did have some humorous moments, like in the first act when you see that reporter's like rehearsing in the mirror.
Yeah.
Like putting on the voice and then some guy walks in and is just like awkwardly looking around asking him about the day.
Yep.
But my favorite was when they go to the morgue. The coroner like knocks on the morgue slab door and he's like, visitors, Eddie.
Yeah, anybody in?
Opens it up. He's gone. Yeah. He was there this morning.
Why is it that like the mortician is always the best character in horror movies?
I think because you probably find in real life it takes a certain personality to have that job.
And they're always eating. For some reason. Every single time.
It's like a lot of people in the medical field, they have like a black sense of humor because like if you don't laugh, you'll cry or like you'll get nightmares from the stuff you see on the job.
Mm-hmm.
But you're absolutely right. Like look at fucking Final Destination and Body Melt.
Yep.
Like they're just great. But yeah, I thought the characters were not sort of introduced that well and not overly relatable. Like I didn't find any of them to be likable.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's a horror movie.
Well, I think I look at it in the sense that it is a B-grade horror movie, and to me, that's enough to separate it from the good ones.
Yeah,
and
fair.
So it's a good B-grade movie. So it's a good bad movie.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, character. Like I said, the creature effects, you know, separate it from all of that. So I can move past that. And another thing was, unless I kind of read it wrong, but it seemed to kind of suggest werewolves without. Like speculation, I guess, apart from the cop saying like, oh, it's coyotes.
He says coyotes.
Oh, coyotes, sorry. Or really any denial. Like as soon as werewolves are thrown out as a possibility, everyone just accepts it.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
So like when someone mentions werewolves, I think it could possibly be the bookshop owner when he's like got the silver bullets on the desk and he's got the old folklore books and stuff.
Yep.
He mentions something about werewolves after these killings, and then people are just like, "Oh yeah, there's werewolves."
Yeah, like, but I think even he then like says to the couple, like, "I'm just here to sell books. I'll tell you whatever the fuck you want to hear." Like, yeah, okay. Werewolves. Yeah, werewolves are real. Buy this book on werewolves. He's just trying to sell shit.
I guess the main couple, like the reporter and a like cheating husband, they're not that like opposed to it.
Well, to be fair, they have seen a man come back from the dead, so you're kind of okay. Open-minded at that point, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah, fair. And I said at the start as well, I do appreciate as well that, like you said, they kind of it revolves around this like crime thriller. Like at the end of the day, they're just these reporters investigating these mysterious deaths to track down this elusive killer. Who just happens to be a werewolf.
Yeah.
And an escaped member of a werewolf community. Mm-hmm. So, I like that. That's cool. And I do like, similar to David, that Karen, the main character in Howling, is like haunted by these visions as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not as graphic, I guess. But it's more so just like trauma from the attack.
Yeah.
Like when Eddie held her hostage in that adult theater booth.
I think maybe they leaned into that side of it a bit too much. Because like you said, from the get-go, you kind of get a sense that he's a werewolf in that booth. Mm. And so you know what happened. But all throughout the movie, they keep playing it over but just cutting it short as if it's a mystery what happened. It's like,
yeah,
give us some credit. We know that he was a werewolf. We know that she saw it. And I think a part of that, though, it might be when she's having a like group therapy session.
Mm.
There's like a flash of his werewolf face. Mm. And it's like a blink and you miss it scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, they try to pretend like, oh, it's a mystery when it's really not.
Another example of that is when you see like the old man at the colony when they're having that bonfire and he's like getting ignored by everyone and he kind of says that he just wants to die.
Mm-hmm.
And at the start, I think they give you like a narrated description of definition of depression or something.
I don't know. And
I thought that was kind of like shoehorning depression as an obvious misdirect for actually being a werewolf. Like when the guy's like, you know, I don't want to go on living this way or whatever, like he's referring to being a werewolf, and you get that vibe early on in this film. But I think they try to like have like mental illness or mental health struggles as a red herring, and it just didn't land for me.
I don't think they were thinking about that stuff in the 80s.
Yeah, okay.
Nobody talked about depression until the turn of the century.
That is an interesting point to consider as well, I guess. Yeah, anyway, it's just like another example of me like where I feel like they maybe took the audience members for being dumber than they actually were.
Yeah,
but okay. Like you said, it's a B movie. Maybe they were.
Yeah.
Maybe we're just watching this after seeing like the elevated horror of the 2010s going back to the fucking Howling, and we're like, oh, what were they thinking? So I get it.
Yeah, but we're looking at it through a very skewed lens. apart from the very last shot, I love the ending of this movie.
Yeah, remind me the final sequence.
Oh, just that, like, they go through this ordeal. She has everyone around her killed. She gets attacked by werewolves. Yeah. She survives. And then they just create this plan that she's going to go on live TV and warn people about werewolves and turn into one. Mm. And that's exactly what happens. And I think that's so cool. It's like, you end the movie just blowing everyone's fucking minds.
Yeah.
Like, okay, she's a werewolf. She turns into a werewolf live on TV, and then the guy shoots her with a silver bullet just to get the word out there.
Yeah.
And then they have like people in a bar being like, oh, it's special effects. You know, they'll show anything on TV these days.
Mm.
And just, it's like, oh, yep. They go through all this effort to do that, and nobody believes them anyway.
Yeah. That kind of reminded me a bit of Romero's Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
And it opens with like the panic in the news studios, and this like one guy is on there talking about like zombies and how they're reanimating and what you got to do to cleanse society, and everyone's like discrediting him.
Yeah.
The final shot though, where it's just like a hamburger patty frying, then the credits roll. Like, I know they kind of mentioned throughout the film that the main reporter's partner is like a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. So when he starts eating like spare ribs and stuff, they're a bit shocked. But like, what was the point of that final shot?
I think it was just because it was a joke. It has that shot on the TV, and then it pans across in the bar to show the woman, the sexy werewolf woman.
Right.
And she just gets a burger. How do you want it? rare. It's like, oh yeah, get it, because she's a werewolf, she eats rare meat, and so it's just they hold on a hamburger patty being cooked rare. I don't know. It's like they didn't know how to end the movie, so they just went out on a joke.
Yeah,
setting up a sequel.
Okay, that's weird, but I get it. That woman you're talking about, she kind of like seduces the main reporter's husband, and then there's this whack like campfire sex scene where they're slowly changing as they're getting into it, and then you've got this awful like animated like transformation sequence as it like tilts up to show the full moon. And then like the next day he gets out of bed, he's shirtless, got scratches down his back, the wife accuses him of cheating, and he just backhands her. It's like he's not even subtle.
The real monster is domestic abuse.
Oh man, yeah, they're talking about mental health and they're talking about domestic abuse. I feel like this film was trying to say more than what got across, but I mean, I don't know, look at Evil Dead, they were backhanded partners in there as well. Yeah, that was just more slapstick, I guess.
It's okay when it's the 80s and everyone's possessed.
Yeah, you know what was cool though, like I guess apart from the main like shapeshift, when Eddie's like bubbling and with the unblinking eyes, was that severed arm where like the wolf is attacking her. And she, like, hides behind something where the arm's reaching through, cuts it off, and it just, like, twitches and changes into a human arm.
Yeah, I did like that. That was sick. That was really cool.
That was probably my favorite scene of the whole film. Mm-hmm. And, because the kind of climax of the film is, like, one of her co-workers, like, the male, like, investigator or whatever, like, gets those silver bullets from the bookstore, shoots a bunch of the werewolves at this barn or something, and, like, burns them alive in it, like the Suspiria ending.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they're driving away, Karen's in the car, the werewolf comes through and she gets bitten.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you have like the transformation on live TV. Like that was like a really unusual scene. It's like they didn't believe that silver would work on them, because when he says, like, he cocks the gun and he says, "I've got silver bullets," they just like slowly pace towards him. He shoots one and they like drop to the ground dead. But then they each just do the same thing.
Yeah.
Do you think they just don't believe?
I don't think it's that they didn't believe silver bullets would kill him. I read it as they didn't believe he had silver bullets. Maybe they knew it would... Oh, actually, no, maybe they didn't know it would work, because then back to like the old guy who wanted to kill himself, if he knew that silver bullets would kill him, then he would have done that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe they do just think they're immortal and they're like, silver, that'll do nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought that was really odd. But it was interesting because it wasn't like this big showdown. It was just kind of like, oh shit, I actually do have a weakness. Like five of us drop dead and the rest burn in a barn.
I do like that once it is shown that it's effective, the doctor like walks up to him and gets shot, and then he's like, "Thank you." It's like, so he does think he's cursed.
Yeah.
And so he's like, "Yep, yeah, all right, this curse has ended. Finally, I can die."
Yeah. So maybe like a lot of them felt that way. And it was, they did like see it as a curse, whereas Eddie saw it as like a gift.
Which is the title of the doctor's book, The Gift.
Oh, is it?
That he was trying to push TV scenes.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Nice. But speaking of sequels, so The Howling spawned 7 goddamn sequels.
Fucking hell.
Somehow. And like I said, The Howling 4, which was called, I think, The Original Nightmare in 1988, was a closer adaptation, more faithful adaptation to the book. And apparently Andy Muschietti, director of the It remakes, has been signed on for a Netflix remake.
Ooh.
Which I don't know if that's in production or in development or it's coming out, but...
I'm actually a bit excited about that.
Yeah, because it does, like... Now that we've unpacked it a bit more, I can appreciate what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. It just didn't come off that way.
Yeah.
So maybe with modern...
This is... Like I've talked before about remakes, this is the perfect, like, candidate of taking a movie that was not good... but had good ideas, and then remake it in a good way.
Yeah.
This is what needs to be done.
Yeah. At the end of the day, they had a $1 million budget in 81. So if you've got the director behind the highest grossing horror film unadjusted for inflation of all time having a crack in this day and age, like, surely it's going to do well.
Plus, I feel like we've been in a lull for a long time in terms of not only werewolf, but supernatural kind of mythology movies in general.
Mm.
Like... I feel like Twilight is to blame. It kind of... Has there been another monster that has been ruined, like their image, more than vampires because of Twilight? And to a degree, werewolves?
You could argue that Interview with the Vampire trashed vampires lore.
But I mean, some people love that. I've not seen that, so it's I can't comment too much.
You got to tread lightly because she kind of helped, you know, create that genre.
Right.
After Bram Stoker, I guess.
Mm. But yeah, so I feel like we've been in just a complete lull for like werewolves and vampires, and so we need them. We need them back, coming hard and scary again.
So I guess the last one that we wanted to go into in a bit of detail was Ginger Snaps from 2000.
Yep. I'd never seen this movie. I know someone we went to school with, Brooke. I think she loved this movie, and I could see why she loved this movie.
It's edgy.
I did not love this movie.
Really?
I thought it was interesting. I liked things about it, but I am the opposite of the target demographic for this movie.
Interesting. I loved it.
Okay, so maybe you're the target demographic. I was going to say
I'm a teenage woman.
It's a teenage girl going through puberty is who has some edge to them is the target demographic for this movie.
Yeah, it's definitely this is one that's kind of like a coming of age horror, and like you said, uses lycanthropy as a metaphor.
Yeah, and I very much love that. Like they use being a werewolf as an analogy for going through puberty as a young girl.
Like a change that you don't understand.
Yeah, just something's changing with your body.
Makes you lash out at people.
Yep, changes who you are. And I don't have too much experience with that because I'm not a girl.
Yeah. I mean, interesting you say that because I found things in this that made it relatable to men. Like when she attacks her quote unquote boyfriend and he starts pissing blood and he's freaking out. Women go through that monthly.
Sure.
And I thought things like that were really interesting, how they found a way to make it just as scary, I guess, to guys. But this was a Canadian film and directed by John Fawcett, who did The Dark and a few Orphan Black episodes.
Okay. You know what's weird is this film kind of had the aesthetic of an Australian movie.
I got that vibe.
Yeah, I don't know what about it. Maybe it's just because it was I haven't looked at the budget, but it seems very low budget. Just the way it was shot.
Yeah. It was a budget of $5 million. And it only made, I don't think this is domestically, I think this is global, $570,000.
Oh, that is a failure.
Yeah, it fucking flopped.
Failure, my dude. But it still had two sequels?
Yeah, and it found a cult following, I think. Probably because it's a product of its time. Like I said, it's very 2000s, late 90s. You can see it in the music and the clothing, the way they speak, the way they interact.
Yep.
I guess that's just a high school setting.
But yeah.
I can see why people like it. And I think why I enjoy it so much, particularly in comparison with these other two, is it's so different for a werewolf film.
Yeah. I like that they take werewolf stuff and they turn it on its head and use it in a different angle. I definitely like maybe the third act of this movie the most. Because the first is just, I don't like the characters. They're the type of people that are edgy for edgy's sake. And they've been rejected by society. So they're going to reject society and...
Gothic outcasts.
Yeah, I hate the word. I hate people using the word cringe, but it's kind of cringe.
This is interesting because the first act is probably my favorite.
Oh, no. Okay. That's not good.
That's really interesting. We just got two different ends of the stick of this film.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. It was written by Fawcett, by the way, and Karen Walton. Starring Catherine Isabel, Emily Perkins, and Chris Lynch. I'm going to say that's how you say it.
Look, I leave the names to you because I suck at pronouncing regular words, let alone names.
Yeah. Juxtaposition. Definitely a lot of strong feminist themes. What I thought also was different about this is... She kind of slowly evolves into a werewolf instead of shape-shifting on a full moon.
Yeah.
Which was yet another thing I hadn't really seen before.
Yeah. The full moon is when she has her final transformation, but it's a slow lead up until then of slowly going through it.
And I would say maybe excluding Trick or Treat, which, had a segment regarding werewolves in 2007.
Yep.
This is probably the last werewolf film I've seen, or one of the last ones that still had practical effects. Maybe except for Dog Soldiers in 2002.
Okay.
So, yeah, props for that as well. But it's essentially an angsty teenage slasher, just with werewolves.
I wouldn't even call it slasher, though. I feel like that's maybe doing it a bit of a disservice.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you see fair. You see some gore. There's disemboweled dogs a lot.
Yeah.
What I thought was really cool, which you probably thought was cringe, was that they fake... graphic suicides for a school presentation.
No, I did love that.
Okay.
Because was that also the opening credits?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a really good opening credits, just them shooting themselves suicide.
Arranged in abhorrent ways.
Yeah. No, I just don't like their personalities is all.
Okay. And I guess what I liked about that as well, because like one of them's a photographer, the other one like uses makeup and dresses up like they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
When like that bully comes over to like confront them about their missing dog, and then the two sisters like kidnap her, and there's a struggle in the kitchen, she slips and kills herself. The parents come home, so then they play it off like they're shooting another fake suicide.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
That was beautiful. And then chuck the body in the freezer and like the fucking fingers snap off. And then the mum's carrying them around in a container like mm-hmm. later in the film. I don't know. It's a lot of weird things in this film, man, that I thought were great. But I also like they try to work in silver with this. But it so in An American Werewolf in London, like they don't need silver bullets. In The Howling, silver bullets is what killed them. In this, they incorporate silver, but it has no effect. Like the silver in the belly button
ring. I think it's kind of left a bit open as to whether or not it has an effect because they try it as a potential. And I don't know, the way I sort of saw it is that maybe it did slow it down, like it slowed down the process.
Yeah, okay.
And then because then when she rips it out, she kind of accelerates in her transformation a bit.
Mm.
But yeah, maybe it didn't have an effect. Maybe that was just their way of being like, yeah, it's werewolves, silver, let's put a little bit into the story.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they introduce, I can't remember what do they call it? Wolf's hound.
It's like the new version of Wolfsbane.
Yeah.
Like the flower.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. And you mentioned before, like, they made three films out of it, which I've only seen the first one, and it definitely has some sequel bait at the end of this first one, but the third installment is set in the 19th century, but it's the same characters and actors playing the sisters.
Well, it wouldn't be the same characters then, would it?
It is. Ginger and her sister.
Please... No, what? That doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
How could they be the same character? You must be wrong about it.
Unless I'm mistaken.
You must be mistaken.
Because I'm intrigued to watch it to find out, like, how the fuck.
Unless there's like time travel or they're reincarnations, then you're wrong.
I could be mistaken. Feel free to shoot me a hot take to deadhousepod@hotmail.com. But yeah, that's why I'm intrigued to watch the third one. Anyway, some interesting things I found that were like a correlation between those three films was... They all show, like, dogs barking at the characters when they're cursed.
Yep.
So, it's that classic.
And a dog knows when something's wrong.
Yeah, they're sensitive.
They can sense the monster.
Yeah. A lot of, like, heavy sexual themes, but also presented, like, sleazily in the three films. Like, you've got the adult movie theaters of the first two and, like, one-night stands. And then, you know, being set in high school, Ginger Snaps is very much about, like, men taking advantage of women and
her
that
last
party
name's
culture.
Not Snaps, is it?
No, the film's Ginger Snaps.
Yeah, oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the character's name.
Oh, no. That'd be poor parenting. Yeah. and yeah, also practical effects. Like we said at the start, we love Van Helsing. You're a fan of Underworld. I can't quite remember them. I've seen maybe three of them.
I don't know if I'm mistaken, but didn't Pace say the other day that he hates that movie or that franchise?
Yeah, he's not a big werewolf and vampire
that
guy.
That hurt me a little bit because I've grown to like Pace and the one encounter I've had with him.
Yeah,
but
he's a good dude.
But yeah, I like those movies.
Yeah, and like I said, a lot of them post like 2005-ish. Well, even Van Helsing was 2004. You get, it's all just CGI, but I do like the transformation scenes in Van Helsing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I just realized Underworld and Van Helsing both have Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
So she's just a vampire werewolf hunting badass, I guess.
That's it.
And then you've got other classics like the 1985 Silver Bullet, which was adapted from a Stephen King short story, I want to say.
Okay.
A 1994 film just called Wolf, which I've not seen. It's got Jack Nicholson and Michelle Pfeiffer, and that's more of like a romance edge.
Yeah, I don't think I
not
have an interest
Twilight
in watching
vein.
That.
Yeah. And I mentioned Dog Soldiers, which... That I wanted you to watch, we just couldn't fit it in. Because that's like a British, like, it's like an action horror. Recommend it. But what we posted in the Dead's Facebook chat this week was, what's your favorite transformation scene? And I wasn't going for, like, explicitly, like, a werewolf transformation. That just must be where, like, everyone's mind went. Because
I feel like that's the most common, like, transformation scene in movies.
Okay. Because mine, like, if I had to pick them, it probably wouldn't be a werewolf film.
Okay.
And
neither would mine.
The two comments we had were werewolf related.
Okay.
And films that we've discussed. Which is great. So we had Pace who said when David Gordon Green transformed Halloween into garbage. But no, his legit answer was also American Werewolf in London, of course.
Nice, okay.
And then Mikey friend of mine said The Howling 4, which is the one I said was like a closer...
They turn into the puddles.
Closer adaptation. He said it actually has a pretty decent werewolf transformation scene, but the rest of the movie's trash, though.
Right, I might just have to look up clips on YouTube then.
You can find it on YouTube. It's pretty gnarly. It's a bit long, kind of like the shapeshift scene in the first one, but it is cool how they just kind of melt and then reform like Hellraiser or something.
All right.
But what would yours be, your favorite transformation scene?
Could you guess it?
I was thinking The Fly, but it's a slow kind of transformation.
Well, you've nailed the movie. It is The Fly.
Okay.
But it's specifically the scene where she...
Cronenberg's Fly, by the way.
Yeah, she knocks his jaw off.
Oh, and that's sick. And that's
like the final transformation
the,
where
like,
he turns...
And sucker thing is exposed.
But he finally turns from human to fly.
Yeah.
And so his... Yeah, his jaw comes off and then his...
She like slaps him, doesn't she?
Yeah, and then his fucking... Sick. His face opens up and then the head of a fucking fly just pushes its way out.
Yeah.
Fucking gnarly.
That reminds me beautiful. Of like a 50s film called House of Wax, which was a remake and has since been remade, but it's got Vincent Price playing this like hideously burned, deformed wax creator who like sculpts around dead bodies.
Yep.
And she like slaps him in the final act and it just comes away and it shows his real face. But yeah, that's a sick one. I couldn't decide between two. One was in The Thing when the dude is on the table. They put like the paddles through his stomach and it just opens up and then his head just stretches off the table and grows spider legs.
I don't know if I'd class that as a transformation scene.
Okay.
Because that's not like it's a human turning into something. That's the thing the whole time. I don't know. That's skating
the
line.
But
the
thing
line.
Is him. Yeah. Like he's become the thing.
Yeah, but he doesn't... It's not like he turns into the thing. He is the thing. You know?
Okay.
Like he is... The parasite. It's not like he turns into the parasite.
Well, if you're going with that logic, then my second option also doesn't work.
Because
the other one was the final scene of The Stuff, which you still haven't seen, but I really want you to watch. This dude essentially just opens his mouth and he looks like he's going to vomit, but his throat just like starts expanding and contorting and his jaw separates.
I've seen that scene though.
Yeah, all this shit just comes out of him and attacks someone else in the room.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
So, neither of yours, I accept.
Yeah. Werewolves.
Werewolves, there you go. This was, I don't know what this will cut down to, but it might still be a bit of a long episode, as I guess how topics usually are.
Yeah, I feel like we've got a little bit of liberty with the topic episodes.
Yeah, kind of hard to talk about a whole topic and a couple of movies all in one. But, man, I love werewolves. They're just cool. I want them to come back, and I want them to stop being sexy.
Yeah, give us just a werewolf horror film. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need some social
commentary. We got the Wolfman coming up with Lee Whannell, right?
Oh, true.
So he might just breathe new life into that genre.
Yeah, see, I liked the 2010 one, but it's a weird cast. Like
Anthony Hopkins?
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins, Emily Blunt, and Benicio Del Toro. They did not gel well, but it did make the OG one scary.
Yeah, all right. Well, thank you for listening to our ramblings on werewolves, spelt... W-E-R-E, not W-E, apostrophe R-E, wolves.
Or W-H-E-R-E.
You know what else I love? Curse of the Were-Rabbit. Wallace and Gromit.
That is a banger of a film. I used to watch that a lot as a kid.
Yeah. Anyway, look forward to our next episode, which will drop next Monday. I can't remember what movie we're doing, but...
I can, but I obviously cannot tell you.
All right. I'll be excited right to watch it. So we'll drop that on Monday, and you can catch us in the meantime on Deadhouse or Deadhouse Pod.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back.